You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
At home and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I am your co-host Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is the intelligent, the charming, and the foul-mouthed.
Oh yeah, that's me. I'm Charlene Schmidt.
Charlene Schmidt.
Yes.
I guess I should have finished it. But...
Oh, but no, that was such a good introduction. So true. Every descriptive word. I love it. Thank you for such flattery. I love it.
All of you at home should be thankful that we try to keep Trek FM as G-rated as possible. Probably PG-13.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, PG-11, maybe, somewhere around in there.
Yeah, we're pretty family-friendly, I would like to say, around here. But we try.
We try to be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little difficult sometimes, but we have a lot of restraint to try and keep it friendly for all audiences. Now, if you want to hear me really as I am, go on Mouthy Broadcast and... That's the true me there with some vodka and my usual linguistic skills.
I want to talk about that just for a second.
Okay.
Okay, here's the thing. So many rumors are flying around about Star Trek coming back to TV with Brian Singer, Brian Fuller, even Michael Dorn. You know, like, but these are all just rumors and people in development hell and things like that. And so everything you hear is not like, oh, yeah, it's going to happen. No, it's far from going to happen. But... I've asked the question a lot on Twitter, like, disregarding rights, what network do you think would be good to host future Star Trek? And so many people are saying, Cinemax, Showtime, HBO, you know, like, and something like that.
What?
And it's all because of Game of Thrones and Spartacus and all that kind of bullcrap. And
no.
So I want to hear from you, like, what do you think about the risk of putting Star Trek on a network where you can do whatever you want?
The risk of it? Well, yes, yeah, certainly you can be a little more edgy. You can use more colorful metaphors. As Spock said, you can get more violent. You can get more sexy, right? I mean, that's the whole idea. And then, of course, the writers and producers, they tend to have a little more freedom to do what they want. And with Star Trek, that could go oh so very wrong because of the massive amount of responsibility it takes to try and please the entire audience, which J.J. Abrams has had to deal with since 2008-ish.
Right.
I mean, he, if anybody, would know just how critical Star Trek fans are. So you're probably going to really please one segment of the audience if you went this route.
Yeah.
And then you're really going to tick off everybody else who doesn't like it. And that doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Someone's going to be totally pissed at you.
The thing is that I feel like Star Trek should be for everyone. So many of us have memories of watching Star Trek with our families growing up. And, you know, I was practically an infant when Star Trek was introduced to me. And if it was on HBO and followed the Game of Thrones format, no, you would not be able to share Star Trek with anyone under 18. And I feel like more and more television's being pushed that way. And yes, Star Trek can be violent, it can be sexy, but because of network television, it forces it to be in a certain way that leaves a lot to the imagination and let Star Trek fans think for themselves because we pride ourselves as being an intelligent audience. And when, you know, the term sexposition came about because of this influx of shows, and I'm scared that that will happen to Star Trek if we're on one of those networks.
I think your thoughts there are totally founded because I could definitely see it going in that direction with, say, the right producer who wants to create Star Trek in that vision. And not to say that it would be bad, but yeah, it would definitely take from that very early experience that we all had, because if it's rated R, reasonable parents are not going to let their kids watch it.
Reasonable parents.
Reasonable parents. So you're definitely going to lose that aspect. But at the same time, I want to know what you think. Would a big network like CBS or NBC actually produce something and broadcast a show like Star Trek Now?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like when we were talking about that earlier about, you know, going onto a different network, you know, CBS owns the rights. So, you know, that whole situation of going to HBO or something like that is only if you disregard the rights issues.
Right.
But yeah, with CBS, I just don't know. I mean, I honestly think that if it does, it's going to be generations from now. It's going to be when we're much, much older. When Abrams has died down, like the movies are done, when the third one's over, maybe, and the third one might happen in, 4 years, like the last one? And
2016 is what they're going for, actually, for the 50th anniversary.
I'll believe that when that happens.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like they don't think audiences can handle multiple timelines. I don't feel like they think that the consumers are going to get confused. We're like, well, if we see something on television and it doesn't match up with what's going on with the movies, then maybe I'll just stay at home and crap myself out of the confusion, you know? And that's what CBS and Paramount thinks. That's what they think. And so,
kind of sad, but true. Yeah.
Yeah. And so unless they get JJ to produce them a CBS Star Trek show, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I'm not saying I want that. I'm not saying that it shouldn't happen. I think it should, but I just don't know how profitable it'll be because you hear all these ideas. Like even just the other day, a friend of mine talked to me about how the guy who played Ransom on Voyager wanted to pitch a show about, it was the most esoteric Star Trek idea I've ever heard. And okay. it was even a stretch for like, I apologize. I can't bring it up right now, but it was even a stretch for Star Trek fans to comprehend. Like it was, Ransom didn't actually die and he went back in time or was with, no, it was Ransom didn't actually die and he was hanging out with Gary Seven.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so it's like the two most random characters from two different eras of Star Trek come together. And I'm like, that is not going to happen because it is so esoteric. And so I think that's the problem is that Star Trek fans want to do like, no, we want to do the Voyages of the Reliant, or we want to do Ransom and Gary Seven. And then the only way things are profitable is if you dumb it down and make it for the lowest common denominator, and no one's going to know who Gary Seven or Ransom is.
Right. I feel like that's what J.J. Abrams had to go through, was how do I reach to the wider audience? Well, you do the alternate timeline. You dumb it down and make it more full of action, and you don't care about the science of how black holes work and things like that.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I have to be honest, I really don't foresee Star Trek going onto a major network anytime at all in the near future.
Yeah.
For one thing, it's a lot of money, and I don't feel like the big networks will make a budget to cough it up, to make it worth the while. And also, I'm very curious to know what things like Netflix and Hulu Plus are going to do to the big networks in the next couple of years or so, because I feel like it's going to change greatly. Netflix's star is so on the rise that I feel like it's going to take away from all the other markets unless they find a way to blend in and cash in on this new thing, which I
feel
that's where things are going as it is. Everybody loves to binge watch their favorite TV shows. We all love to watch them online on any device at any time. That's fantastic. But the big networks have to figure that out. They have to figure out how to get in on this game. And until they do that, there is no way in hell we're going to get Star Trek. I'm sorry.
And, you know, speaking of binge watching, that's what this show is actually about, folks.
How many minutes are we into this now?
Yeah, we're about 10 minutes. We're 10 minutes into this podcast,
God.
And now we're going to start our topic.
Wow, I don't know if we've ever been so off topic.
And not so much, but I think every Star Trek fan will relate to it. And also, we want to hear what you think about how the next Star Trek iteration is going to be on television and if it's going to happen. So please go to trek.fm/forums and let us know your opinion. But here's some advice on how you can binge watch season 3 of Voyager. Shar and I have picked out our top 5 episodes to watch all in a row on your favorite Saturday. Now, this is not our best 5 episodes. This is not our favorite 5 episodes. This is what we think would make a great episode marathon. And so we're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and alternate between Shar and myself. Shar, would you please give us our first round?
Absolutely. I would like to preface all of this saying I actually did this marathon just to see how it would work.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Dedication. I
totally.
Like it. Old school, Brando.
My nerdy friend Bree came over to my house. We had some popcorn, watched this whole thing. It was fantastic. All right, so we kicked it off with Future's End.
Fantastic choice. Now, are you counting the two-parter as one?
What I did is I counted it as two separate episodes because that's okay. How they aired. That's kind of the rule we've had, so I stuck with that.
Okay, all right, cool, mm-hmm. Cool.
So Future's End part one and two, we just did them back-to-back. So there's pick one and pick two. I mean,
fantastic. This
is a fantastic two-parter. Being a child of the 90s, and I hadn't watched this in a while, I realized, oh my gosh, how things had changed and how things hadn't changed. You know, things like the cordless phones or Rainn Robbins' gigantinormous cell phone with the huge antenna and her hippie van, the lava lamp. I mean, I just loved it all. It was very groovy. And for a time travel episode, this is so much fun.
That's the thing. It's a very fun time travel episode. I mean, you know, there's always lives on the line. The world's going to end. The universe is going to implode. There's always stuff like that going on. But in this one, there's just so much levity, so much wit, and so much back and forth. It's just, it's a nice, fun thrill ride. And it's a fantastic two-parter. Star Trek Voyager knows how to do its two-parters.
I think it does. Its two-parters are executed pretty well through and through, and this is a very prime example. Now, in the past, I've always felt like part two, like a lot of Star Trek two-parters, kind of declined from the first part. But you know what? Watching this again, just Saturday, made me realize, you know what? There's a lot more to the second part than I really gave it credit for, and I thoroughly appreciated it this time. Maybe because I'm a little older, a little wiser, and I thoroughly laughed and had a good time.
Fantastic. I think it was really hard for me not to pick these, but I was hoping you did.
I did.
And I feel like I know you pretty well over these years.
Yeah.
And I was banking on you choosing these as your number one.
You chose correct, sir. Well done. So, pick number one for you, sir.
Yeah, with mine, this one is actually just after yours. I gotta kick off season three with The Q and the Gray.
All right, this is pick number three for me.
I thought that you would know that I would pick this one, so.
Well, I figured, I went into this knowing there would be just a teeny bit of overlap, and I figured this would be one we would definitely both pick. Too bad. But here's the twist. I will let you know now. I watched this one last.
Okay. All right.
Just to totally throw things off the timeline here.
Why did you watch this one last?
Because I started off with comedy, and then as we go through, some episodes are a little more serious than others, and I just wanted to kind of finish it off with comedy, and what better than this episode?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like just with Miss Q and with John DeLancey and just the whole Civil War thing. I mean, I don't care if you think it's cheesy. It's quaint. It's fun.
It is.
And
yes.
You get to see two Qs mate for the first time. Like, how awesome is that?
Exactly. That was it?
It's like...
Had Janeway known, I really wondered, would she have gone for it if it was just the fingers?
Well, I'm wondering if that's... Not that I want to get too detailed here, but I'm wondering if that's all it would take if he mated with a human or if he would just have to use human form. But I just love it when John DeLancey's like, I was good, wasn't I? And then she's like, yeah.
Leaves so much to the imagination. It's so much fun.
I know. It's so great. I love that for infinite beings with infinite knowledge and who will never die and always exist, that's how fast their sex is.
Yeah, that, I mean... I'm sorry, for them, how short of a time is that? Like 0.000047 seconds?
We did find out in Q squared that like he was only gone for like 30 minutes, and that was like an eternity for the Q. Like they could live for a long time in that. So,
true.
Hey, maybe it's not so bad.
Maybe it was a couple years.
Hey, who knows?
Yeah.
That'd be rough. All right.
Well, for a human, I think it would be a bit much, but for a Q,
it'd be a bit much.
Really good.
Well, since we already know you're one, two, and three, how about I just go for the
Actually, one, two, and five, but yeah, please, why don't you continue? Keep us going.
All right, well, I'll give one more, and then you can go. So, okay. So we all know that I'm a big fan of this lady.
Oh, gee, who would that be?
Yeah, I think the viewers can guess. If you've even listened to, like, one or two episodes of To the Journey with Char and I, you know that I love B'Elanna. a lot. I love her arc. I love Roxanne Dawson's ability to play her. I just love how she changed over the years. And
this I know what episode you're going to pick.
Say it. Speak it.
Blood Fever.
Blood Fever. This is my mate.
Beautifully done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is just such a good episode. Not only is this a good B'Elanna episode, this is just a fun sci-fi episode. And not to think that I have, you know, alien sex on the brain, but this is another mating episode where we see it through a sci-fi lens, where Vorik grabs her face and does a whole telepathic thing, and she gets infected with passion.
Yeah.
And
the love bug.
The love bug, like a literal love bug.
Yeah.
And it's just, we see kind of the sprouting of Paris and B'Elanna's relationship, where he's like, yeah, I've totally wanted this, but I don't want it like this.
Yes.
And we see Chakotay and Tuvok get involved. And also, I mean, this is a moment that we talk about all the time, about this is our introduction to the Borg. Mm-hmm. It only lasts 15 seconds, but it's there.
And it's so freaking good. It's like 15 seconds of solid, oh my God. Yeah, oh my God.
And so it's just with all that mixed together, like, we see great B'Elanna relationship stuff. We get to see B'Elanna beat the crap out of Vorik. And,
yeah, like,
you know,
twice,
the whole,
really.
Yes, sisters are doing it for themselves theme is playing in the background. And
oh, not quite, but yeah.
Oh, not quite, yeah. But, like, that song with the lyrics of sisters are doing it for themselves.
Okay.
So, yeah, I feel like you got to throw that in the mix. There's so many great moments.
Oh, yeah. I feel like this is a very important episode for season 3, largely in part because of the whole Tom and B'Elanna thing. This kind of really gets their relationship going. And it speaks volumes about how far Tom Paris has come. I mean, in season 1, he would have totally bedded B'Elanna and this thing would have been over with. But he has enough respect for her at this point to where he wants a real relationship, and he's not going to take advantage of the situation. He's actually being incredibly sensitive, especially for the, you know, the womanizer that we did know just a short couple of seasons ago. It says a lot about him and his growth, and I feel like that's great. And I feel like B'Elanna, in turn, I mean, this just kind of sets them on their path. So that's fantastic. But then also the whole Vulcan thing. A lot of people were discussing at the time that this aired, oh, they're going to end up doing a Ponfar episode at some point. And it was great that we had this twist that it wasn't Tuvok, because that was too obvious.
Right. Yeah, no, it was great. It was nice to see Vorik a little bit. Mm-hmm. It was nice to see him kind of stretch his legs and have Tuvok try to be a mentor to him in this horribly, horribly difficult and private time.
Yes.
It is. I do like that the doc points out, for such an evolved race, you have a very unevolved
Victorian attitude.
Thank you. A Victorian attitude about sex or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's so true. Yeah, it's absolutely
true. It's not logical,
true.
In my opinion. Why would you be so secretive about sex? Because it's so full of raging emotion? Is that it?
I think that's what it is. Is that you lose control. It's primal. It's everything that they have tried to shake off for, you know, centuries.
Yeah.
Of intellectual pursuit.
I suppose so.
So, okay. So what is your next one?
Well, it was Blood Fever, because that is what we watched third in the list. But since we're overlapping so much, I'm going to pull out an honorable mention and kind of stay a little bit with the comedy and go for Real Life.
I did not choose this one.
Okay.
And I'm glad you chose it, because there are moments I like in it, but overall, I always kind of like,
Yeah, I mean, this became an honorable mention because it really has no overall place in the season 3 arc. It doesn't really get brought up in the future. Nothing really happens with the Doctor's family. But the episode itself is kind of a nice little fun 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I really wish they would have continued this thread to find out if he did continue with the family. Or, I mean, I really hate that he dropped it. But Robert Picardo, as usual, is awesome. You can't go wrong with a Doctor episode. So,
yeah,
I'm going to throw this one in here.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good choice, because it's a very different episode for Voyager, and it's good to mix it up in a marathon. I mean, like we said, it's not just the best episodes, it's just you want to get a flavor of the entire season. Mm-hmm. And the different aspects and the different points of view from every character. And I think, even though I wouldn't have chosen it, it's a very good choice for this type of marathon.
yeah, it's a good one to throw in. And this was not, as I said, a part of my actual marathon. But if I mean, I really considered this one, so why not?
All right. Well, my next one, so this would be my third one, because I've only gone twice so far.
Oh, my goodness.
Is Before and After.
Oh, my God. This is my fourth one. Oh, my God.
Jeez.
But how can you not? I mean, this is actually a very integral episode for season three.
Absolutely. Yes. This is huge if you think about episodes later on mm-hmm. with the Krenim.
Yes, exactly. I mean, this is a prelude to season four.
This was very avant-garde for Voyager and also Star Trek in general to show something this far ahead. And have the same, you know, the ship design didn't change. The torpedo being lodged in the hull, they kept it. And they just kind of swapped out Kes for Seven of Nine.
Yeah, go figure.
And it was just, I remember as a kid, like when the Krenim storyline came along in season four, I was like, wait.
Yeah, something's not right.
I have seen this before. And it's just, as a kid, I felt like I was a genius because I remembered, but...
Well, of course, because you can remember everything when you're in the seventh grade. No detail goes unnoticed.
And yeah, it's just... And so with the overall episode, like, even disregarding that, I love Kes. She has a mixed bag of episodes, but I like her as a character. And this is definitely one of the positive ones. Just, I love going back and forth through time episodes where people are displaced and... I love the idea of seeing her and Tom together. And
do you? Well, no, actually, you've mentioned this before.
Yeah, like we've talked about this before about how I'm glad that I saw an alternate reality where it happened, but I'm also glad that it didn't really happen because it would have meant that B'Elanna and Tom probably wouldn't have happened.
Right. Yeah. And for those that don't remember the episode, the only reason why those two didn't end up together was because B'Elanna and Janeway got killed.
Exactly. In the Krenim attack, this hypothetical Krenim attack. And it's just Kes and Tom just make sense. They look good together. They act well together. They care about each other. They're both very smart and ambitious. And it just makes sense. And
mm-hmm. It does work.
With B'Elanna and Tom, it takes a little bit more work and they show it. And they don't betray the audience's intelligence. They show that, you know, this is going to be a hard relationship, but it's worth it. And so,
yeah,
just all of those things mixed together, jumping through time. It's a Kes episode. We get to see Kes and Tom together. It's just, and also the doctor, you know, in hair. It's just crazy.
Yeah, Dr. Van Gogh with, yeah, he's got a full head of hair.
Okay, so I think we've covered all the episodes that you've picked. Do you want to give an honorable mention?
Yes, I definitely do. But before we do that, I want to bring up my favorite moment from Before and After, just because it made me laugh so hard when I did watch this episode. It was where Kes is time hopping to the caretaker era, and we're hearing Neelix kind of do a spiel with Janeway. You need a guide. I'm your guide. And Kes just goes into that time period. She's like, oh, no, not again. Take it out of context. That is the funniest thing ever.
How amazing would it have been if after we watch that episode, we pop in the DVD and go to Caretaker. And we, like, that's the scene that we see. And we're like, whoa.
Oh, boy. What?
I don't remember. It's almost like when you, you don't watch Futurama. Never mind.
No,
so
I'm
I can't
sorry.
Tell you.
Oh.
All right, for all of our listeners at home, it would be like when you see Nibbler's shadow at the pilot of Futurama, even though Nibbler wasn't introduced until much later in the series.
Aha.
So, Char, that means nothing to you, but the people at home, chew on that for a while. It's delicious.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Even though I don't know what you're talking about, I still kind of get it. Because that's awesome. I love it when shows do that. All right, so an honorable mention. I also debated worst case scenario.
That's my final one.
Is it? Okay. Well, We're going to go through some honorable mentions tonight, aren't we? This is also just a great, fun 45-minute romp. It deals with Voyager's past. I mean, I really do feel like the whole Maquis and Voyager Starfleet crew thing, they kind of addressed it too little too late, but at least this tries. And they do it in a way that does make sense.
Yes.
So I'll give them credit for that much, and it was fun to watch.
This was incredibly fun to watch. This was an episode where you're like, I would do that and I would have fun. Mm-hmm. Like, you can put yourself in the protagonist's perspective 100%. Because even though it's played by an actor that we, you know, have seen several times before, they're this no-name character ensign. And so we're able to take their place. We're able to go like, okay, what would we do? Like, mm-hmm. would we side with Chakotay or would we side with the captain?
Right.
You know, like, would we try to do what Neelix did or would we go along with it? Like Tom, you know, it's just so much fun. It's so much fun.
Oh, yeah. It's a great hypothetical game. You've got all these options to try what you wouldn't really do in that situation just to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, and we get to see Tom in a gold uniform. That's just fun.
Yes, yes, that's kind of odd and cool, different.
It I know this sounds weird, but it washes him out. You know, it's like...
I agree. It did not look right on him, did it?
No, there's certain times, like when you see Seven in a blue uniform, you're like, yes, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see... on Twitter, you and I saw the new poster for a new Voyager book, and we saw Harry and Chakotay in... First Contact uniforms, it just felt right. You're like, that's cool. That's mm-hmm. awesome.
Not a second thought. It looks great.
Yeah, and we saw Kim in a red First Contact uniform. You're like, yeah, we can see him like that.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, eventually. But when you see Tom in a gold one, you're just like, no.
Yeah, what?
No.
Uh-uh. No, this is not a proper timeline, obviously.
It's like Picard in a blue uniform.
Yeah.
In that. Yeah.
It just makes you do a double take. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, so do you have any honorable mentions now that we have covered all of your list, right?
No, I got one more.
Oh, by all means. Sorry.
All right, so this would be my second to last because I was going to end on worst case scenario because ending on worst case scenario is fun, it's inclusive, and it ends with a little bit of drama, and we get a surprise visit from Seska. That's just awesome. That's the way to end a marathon.
Yeah, yeah. And,
but the one before that, I wanted to get a little bit more serious. It's not like the universe is going to implode, but Distant Origin.
Okay, this was another honorable mention that I did consider for my marathon as well.
This episode hits close to home for me because for those of you who know me personally, I am a man of faith and I'm also consider myself a man of science. And so it's sometimes hard for me to balance, you know, what I was raised on and what I know to be true. And this is the type of episode that is so great for Star Trek to tell. It places a mirror on society through a sci-fi lens. And that is what great Star Trek does. That is what great Star Trek is all about.
Yes.
And we talk about that a lot on To the Journey, about how phaser battles are cool. We want to see Seven in a sexy outfit, but we watch it for this. We watch it for the discourse, mm-hmm. for the societal effect. And are we holding progress back because of outdated dogma? This is not any of my opinions. I'm just asking the questions.
Well, and that's just it, though. I mean, that is totally subject to one person's opinion. It's going to vary between all of us. And so we all get to come to our own conclusions on that. But it's the fact that Star Trek makes us think about it.
Absolutely. There's so many people out there who believe that humanist is just a cotton candy term for atheism. And I don't agree with that. And there's tons of atheism in Star Trek, and there should be. But the thing is like episodes like this and a lot of episodes in Deep Space Nine
mm-hmm.
throw that into a different perspective. And in Distant Origin, they talk about how science and faith is the same thing. And this is a very, very advanced race. This is
right.
much more advanced than humans. And they came from the same planet as us.
Yeah. Space dinosaurs. Come on,
They're
people.
Space dinosaurs. Come on. And then you look at DS9 with the Bajorans and how they live their life and about how their faith is literally real. You know, the prophets actually are real. They exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot even comprehend them. We call them wormhole aliens. They call them prophets. And who's right, who's wrong? And it's neither and both.
Right.
So Star Trek is telling us that in Deep Space Nine and through that lens. And then Distant Origin is telling us the exact opposite in a different way. And it's just fantastic. And these are the questions that need to be asked. And Star Trek is the one who will ask them.
Absolutely. I feel like no matter where you stand on the spectrum between, say, full-out atheism and full-out faith, the thing is I love the fact that Star Trek makes us consider our stance, no matter where we're at, rethink it, evaluate it, because I think, as you mentioned earlier, you get raised with one thing when you're a child and you don't know any better, and you may stick with that or you might not. And no matter what you do, I feel like you should evaluate why you choose what you choose. especially when it comes to something like faith, because that's so incredibly important to our well-being in our lives, no matter what you choose. Again, I'm not taking any sides whatsoever. It's that important, though.
All right. Well, we've covered all of mine now. Have we covered all of yours sufficiently, you think?
Yeah, I think so. Why don't we start wrapping up? Because we are, well, we ran out of time. So that happened fast.
Because we jumped around a lot, Char, how about you give us our 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, your original 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for those people at home?
All right. Sounds good. Future's End 1, Future's End 2. Then we go to Blood Fever, Before and After. Top it off with Q and the Grey. And yours?
Fantastic. Mine is the Q and the Grey, go on to Blood Fever, go into the middle with Before and After, have Distant Origin, and then tie it up with Worst Case Scenario.
Fantastic. And to be honest, I could have easily made this a 10-episode marathon. There is so much that's good in season 3. I mentioned last week it's one of my favorite seasons. There's some huge ups, and granted, there's some major downs, but the stuff that's good is really freaking good.
Coda.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's an awful episode.
Darkling.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about those.
Season 3 is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM. Here is a little glimpse of what else has been happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Mark Cushman on Season 2.
Gene Kuhn was real good at writing comedy, and Gene Roddenberry did not want that for Star Trek. And Roddenberry just said, we are not going to go down that road.
Earl Grey.
The Borg on TNG.
But it's only one episode that we get this, like, technology-obsessed Borg until they become more of, like, a perfection-obsessed Borg. That they're trying to complete themselves, I guess. It's just kind of a strange anomaly.
There's a hole in their heart that only technology can...
Yes, Borg are the Jerry Maguire of You Complete Me.
The Ready Room.
Remember Me.
Well, one thing you didn't mention, that the fact that this is the only TNG episode to make it to Lilith Fair, you know... Will you remember me?
Oh, God.
Na, 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 na. Really? I mean, that's... You didn't know that? Okay.
The Orb.
Ferengi values versus Federation values.
We look at the Ferengi and we bristle at them because we don't like being reminded that if we lived our lives evolutionary-wise and that was all there was, you end up with nihilism.
To the journey!
Janeway's best command decisions.
I might be able to understand where you're coming from if part 2 of Scorpion was not completely devoted to explaining how Janeway was wrong in every single way. Warp 5.
Prequel technology.
You almost feel like photon torpedoes should have happened 50 years after Enterprise, and they should have gone through 3 different kinds that you'd never heard of. Yeah. And that seems more real to me.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Hewitt Wolf on Trek.
Some elements that are in Deep Space Nine that I've never been able to quite fit together with other elements, I think it might actually start to fit together once I understand Robert Hewitt Wolf's involvement, who I like to call R.H. Dubs.
Literary Treks.
Editing Star Trek with Margaret Quark.
I try to make sure that the books are true to their theory. That if you're reading a TOS book, it feels like, okay, Bob Chesterton would have bought this story. He couldn't afford the effect, but Bob Justman would have gone into Gene and went, you really should read this, this is good.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are on virtually any kind of platform that you seek, or you can just go to trek.fm/PD for the podcast directory. And not only do we love you listening to all of our shows, but we love iTunes reviews.
That we do.
We don't have any that we can brag about this week, so if you haven't left us a review just yet, we would appreciate it. We will give you a shout-out on the show if you leave us 5 stars and a short review. We love that kind of a feedback. It keeps us going. It's our little reward for doing this show, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a love note from you to us, and we cherish it, and we keep it away in a little keepsake box, and we go to it every now and again when we're feeling down.
Absolutely. It's our motivation. And I mean, Valentine's Day is right around the corner. So if you love us.
If you love us, send us an iTunes Valentine.
There you go. Perfect. We also need to talk about our sponsors. So Tristan, why don't you tell us who that is?
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have some good news and some bad news for you. The bad news is that we are not going to be here next week because Shar and I are going to the Tsunkatsi match.
Yes, I can't wait. I'm pumped.
Pumped. And for those of you who can't go to the Tsunkatsi match, you can watch it on Space Pay-Per-View.
That's right.
But when we do come back, which will be the week after next, we are going to be talking about a new segment called Friends of the Delta Quadrant.
Yes.
And Char, who are we going to be talking about?
Well, we're going to talk about our favorite furry friends, the Talaxians.
They are definitely my favorite, and we know that they're not everybody's favorite, and that is what we're going to talk about. It's going to be a lot of love and hate, and we are going to love talking about it either way. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!